Trinidad Chambliss is a Disney movie, man. Like, this dude was a Division II quarterback. I believe he was going to go to Temple, and then Ole Miss came in and, I guess, sweetened the pot. Some of the stats they put up there on the Sugar Bowl broadcast, it was mind-boggling to even think this was real. Kirby Smart and Georgia had won 53 straight games when winning at halftime, and 75 straight games when winning entering the fourth quarter. And both of those streaks came to a close on New Year's night because of Trinidad Chambliss.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
3, 2, and 1. Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, joined, as always, on Mondays by the one and only Adam Burke, who, I don't know, we haven't even discussed it off air, but I just let him rant for a little while on Ohio State and their performance in the quarterfinals. So we'll get into that. We have two semifinals to break down. We will have multiple episodes this week. The usual suspects will stop by. Indiana West, who will, I believe, be headed down to Atlanta. He's following the Cignetti train every single way it goes. So Indiana West, Wes Reynolds will join us. Matt Humans, who will also check in with Brett Ciancia as well. Just a reminder, continue to rate, review, and subscribe. We're up on YouTube, almost to 1,000 subscribers. So we've been slowly climbing, so much appreciated. YouTube.com/collegefootballbettingpodcast. So we've got Ole Miss in Miami on Thursday night down in Glendale, and then Indiana, Oregon in Atlanta. Wes. I had Indiana on the mind. Adam. Oregon, Indiana, not that surprising, but the fact that Ole Miss will be taking on Miami in the semifinals. It wasn't that long ago I opened up this podcast and I said Circa was hanging Miami 200-1 before the bracket came out in the first weekend of December, and now they're a 3.5-point favorite, Adam, in the semifinals.
Yeah, first of all, hello. Good to be with you again. My first show with you of 2026. So thank you to everybody for checking the show out throughout 2025. Appreciate it. What is the deadline to say Happy New Year? Has it passed already?
I think Saturday, according to Larry David.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, good to be in 2026 then to everybody out there. Look, I mean, you know, when this bracket came out, like you said, I mean, before the bracket even came out, because this was a Miami team, we didn't know if they were going to get in or not.
Right.
And then when the bracket came out, you're like, all right, well, Texas A&M is a tough game. And then you win that one, and then you get Ohio State, and that's a really tough game. And then if you somehow get through that, you get Georgia, and that's a really tough game. And here they are. I mean, I've been really, really impressed with this Miami team, which is easy to say because they've beaten Texas A&M and Ohio State. But the thing that I think is really interesting about Miami, and I'm curious to get your take on this because I'm a nerd. I'm an analytics guy, right? I love the numbers. The numbers are so important to me. But in having watched Miami, right, Carson Beck's thrown for under 250 yards in two playoff games. They're 2-0 anyway. Mark Fletcher had 80 of his 172 yards on two of his carries against Texas A&M. They've had just enough explosive plays on offense to be able to score some points, and of course had the big pick six against Ohio State. But Shannon Dawson is so damn good at calling plays that get this team to 3rd-and-2 or 3rd-and-3 and give them a chance to convert. Because if they were sitting 3rd-and-5, 3rd-and-6, 3rd-and-7, they probably would have still beaten Texas A&M, but they would have lost to Ohio State. But they kept doing just enough on offense to get these 3rd-and-manageables. And I think Shannon Dawson has been the star of the college football playoff here so far. I think he's been brilliant. Even though the numbers don't show it, he's been brilliant. And I think that this is an example, because to me, I'm somebody who actually doesn't watch a lot of sports. Like, because I'm at my desk 12 to 14 hours a day, like, when I get done at night, we're watching some random show on Netflix or Hulu or any of the 19 streaming services we have. But I have watched Miami's two games. And, like, this is something that doesn't show up in the stats, but it's something you pick up by watching. And I've been very impressed with what Shannon Dawson's been able to do, maximizing the things that his offense does just well enough to, you know, really help the defense out.
Well, and to kind of piggyback off of that, right, Carson Beck, the question was, is he going to have a Carson Beck performance? Is he going to have the four-pick game? And whether it's Beck, whether it's Dawson's play calling, or just both of it together, he's been very smart. And I think the point that you made is really astute, which is they were 7 of 14 on third downs against Ohio State, right? They continued to kind of get those big-time plays. And when the game went to 17-14, I think many of us were thinking, all right, here we go. And then they punt the ball back to Ohio State in the middle of the fourth quarter. And at that point, I think, at least I thought, well, it was fun, Miami, but Ohio State's going to find a way to win this game because that's what they do. They're defending champs. They find ways to win games. The defense bowed up, and then a 10-play, 70-yard drive where you had a 3rd and 3 where you get a 5-yard pickup from Carson Beck, a 3rd and 4 where you get another pickup to C.J. Daniels. Carson Beck has really played well, even though, to your point, the raw stats are not Trinidad Chambliss-esque. He's not running around back there like Michael Vick, but he's doing what he needs to do. And you're also relying on a defense. And you mentioned Shannon Dawson, but Mario Cristobal deserves a ton of credit for going out and getting Corey Heatherman from Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And to come in they were embarrassing on defense a year ago. They had the human highlight reel in Cam Ward, but they couldn't get over the hump. They lost to Syracuse, give up 42 points to a, you know, mediocre football team in Syracuse. I know they won a bowl game in San Diego, but still, they should win that game. Mario Cristobal deserves a ton of credit, and it hurts me, and I think a lot of us, to say that because he's been kind of a running joke in college football for a while for failing at the high levels. But there's no, you know, outside of two blips this year, this Miami team has looked every bit the part. And, you know, I'm at the point, Adam, where once again, they're a 3.5-point favorite on Thursday night against Ole Miss. If this team wins the national championship, it would not surprise me because they kind of do all the small things right. It feels like, and now this could come back and be thrown in my face, but doesn't it feel like they've got the Louisville SMU games out of their system as of now?
Yeah, I think so. And look, I mean, you just think about the pick six, right? And I don't even want to call it anticipation because it was just, that was film study. That was 100% film study where that dude, I mean, you never see a corner get off the line like that and make a play like that, right? I mean, you'll see a defensive lineman, you know, maybe get the snap count right or something like that. But, I mean, that pick six was just an example of Miami paying attention to the details here throughout the course of the college football playoff. And Ohio State didn't. They didn't pay attention to the details. Julian Sain looked so rattled in that football game. I mean, missing Max Clair on the play right before, you know, taking a sack. Just all these different things that Ohio State clearly didn't pay attention to. And I don't know if it was, you know, the distractions of Brian Hartline and the change of play calling duties and all of that. But like what I've seen from Miami and the way that their coordinators have prepared them and the way that Mario Cristobal has actually been fine in most of his game management situations here so far. And now they take on an Ole Miss team where I don't trust Pete Golding in those situations. They happened to outscore Georgia, and Trinidad Chambliss was terrific. But, like, Charlie Weiss is still doing double duty. You know, the defense was not the better side of the ball for Ole Miss during the regular season. Like, it's hard for me not to like Miami in this game. You know, even with the hook, even with the 3.5 here, it's hard for me not to like Miami. That being said, Marcel Reed had the picks. He's not really a great thrower. He's kind of, you know, your throwback dual threat type of quarterback, right? He'll make some throws, but he'll run around and extend plays. Sain is a pocket passer who can't move. I mean, dude's got like 6 yards of grass in front of him, and he still stands there and throws the ball 50 yards out of bounds. Like, that's not what Trinidad Chambliss is going to do. So Miami's going to have to game plan for something very, very different here. Honestly, I kind of like the over 51.5, too, to go with Miami minus the 3.5 in this one.
Yeah, it's so challenging when you think back to Miami, 13 total points on the road at A&M in overtime, And then 24-14 was the final. But Trinidad Chambliss, you know, Kirk Cignetti said it after the Rose Bowl, you could make a movie about their program, and he's not wrong, right? This is the greatest turnaround, in my opinion, in the history of sports, to go from the doormat, the laughingstock of the Big Ten, of all of power conference football, to being the best team in college football in 2 years. But Trinidad Chambliss is a Disney movie, man. Like, this dude was a Division II quarterback. I believe he was going to go to Temple, and then Ole Miss came in and, I guess, sweetened the pot. He takes over for Austin Simmons, and the rest is history. And some of the stats they put up there on the Sugar Bowl broadcast, it was mind-boggling to even think this was real. Kirby Smart and Georgia had won 53 straight games when winning at halftime and 75 straight games when winning entering the fourth quarter. And both of those streaks came to a close on New Year's night because of Trinidad Chambliss, because this team put it all together. And some of the throws he made, some of the escapability that he has. I mean, I think it was Kawan Lacy's first fumble lost of his career. It's a scoop and score. You're down 21-12. You're facing a Georgia team that always makes great second half adjustments. And yet a staff that is kind of held together by bubble gum right now finds a way to win. And a lot of it has to do with the dude wearing six on his back. I mean, Trinidad Chambliss, I think if you look at all four teams, and I know Dante Moore might go number one, Fernando Mendoza might go one, Reuben Bain, if it weren't the Raiders, might go one. Like, you've got the three probably best pro prospects or highest draftable prospects left in this tournament. I think Trinidad Chambliss is the most exciting player remaining in this tournament.
Yeah, I think you could definitely make that case. And look, I mean, that's one why I like the over in this game, because, again, I mean, Chambliss can do things and make throws that Julian Sand can't, that Marcel Reed can't. And the other thing is, you know, I'll go ahead and bitch about Ryan Day for a minute, because
I was waiting for it. We're what, 15 minutes in? You haven't bitched about Ryan Day? Come on now.
I mean, they ran with tempo on that drive at the end of the first half. And of course, that kick did not have a chance in hell. We all knew that before he even lined up for it. But they ran with tempo, and Miami looked tired. I mean, it takes a lot out of their defensive linemen to pressure the quarterback the way that they do. And Ryan Day never went back to tempo, had effectively three possessions in the second half against a team that's virtually impossible to score against. Like, just completely asinine game management by Ryan Day in so many ways. I don't think Ole Miss is going to be stupid like that. I think Ole Miss is going to push the tempo in this game and try to stop that Miami pass rush. And Ohio State had success with it on the one drive that they did it. And if they had done it throughout the second half, maybe we're talking about a different matchup here. But I think Ole Miss is going to push it. And with a guy like Chambliss, you can do that. And so I think it's a really interesting chess match here between these two teams, between these two coaching staffs, where, I mean, you know, Charlie Weiss, they had to get through that game against Georgia to set up this game against Miami, but he's going to be watching that final possession for Ohio State at the end of the first half over and over and over again and go, yeah, this works. Like, we can do this. And so I think this is going to be a really, really fascinating game from in so many different ways, not just from a betting standpoint, because I want to see where this 3.5 ends up going here. And the totals ticked down a little bit here so far. But I think it's just such an intriguing game where maybe you do see Miami's offense and all the talent that they have kind of come to the forefront here a little bit too.
Ole Miss, you know, I was sitting in Circa, actually standing in Derek Stevens' area after we got off VEASAN primetime, and it was me, Matt Newmans, Derek Stevens, a couple other folks were in there, and we're watching the final handful of plays unfold in regulation. And it was one of those moments where it was third and goal, Georgia's down three, and I'm thinking, well, you have to run the ball. We all were in consensus, like, you have to run the ball. Ole Miss doesn't have a timeout, or maybe you run one route where if it's wide open, you throw it, get a touchdown. If not, you eat it and you go to overtime. And once they made that decision, whether that was on Kirby Smart or Bobo or Gunnar Stockton or a combination of the three to force that throw, it's incomplete. It was one of those moments where you knew Ole Miss was going to win because they had Trinidad Chambliss and the way that he was playing. And then also, you know, we mentioned this, and funny enough, it actually didn't work out well for Oklahoma, right? Because they did not make their field goals, but they've got a cheat code right now in this kicker. I mean, Ole Miss's kicker went out there indoors and buried a 55 and a 56 yarder like they were extra points. And then when he stepped up there to win the game, I don't think there was anyone who had any doubt that he was going to make that kick. I mean, it was the opposite of what we saw on Sunday night in Pittsburgh. And I know elements had to do with that. But Lucas Carniero, this dude is an absolute weapon. So does Ole Miss utilize that? Obviously, it's going to be perfect conditions down in Glendale, Arizona. Just kind of another X factor in this game to have a weapon like that where you can trot him out from 55 or 56 at him, and he's going to bury it with what looks to be Brandon Aubrey-esque leg strength.
Well, and it's made even more important by the fact that you're playing against this Miami defense, right? Yeah. I mean, this Miami defense was better in the red zone in terms of touchdown percentage than Ole Miss was, albeit very, very slightly. So, you know, if you've got a kicker that you can rely on where, you know, also, I think it's important to point out, too, that, like, when you have a kicker like that, like, it dictates your play calling a little bit, too. You know, you don't sit there, you know, between the 30 and the 35 and think, oh, man, we've got to get this first down, or we have two plays to get this first down, something like that. You're thinking, you know what, if we don't get it, we're probably still going to get three out of this. And so it's something that's definitely very, very valuable, you know, to have in your back pocket as a play caller, as an offensive coordinator. And that's something that I don't know that Miami has. We will see. You know, their kicker wasn't as accurate, especially from deep, as Carniero has been. So we'll see if that kind of forces Shannon Dawson's hand a little bit. But again, that's why Dawson gets his team into third and two and third and three. And you know, you did see Beck on that final drive to put the Buckeyes away become a little bit more of a runner, right? Ohio State was just kind of, you know, outrunning the quarterback basically on the outside. And he just had all this room up the middle where Arvel Reese was completely absent in that game for Ohio State for some reason. So again, just like the little intricacies of this football game really, really intrigue me. And they probably would have too if it was Georgia, but honestly, like from a watchability standpoint, I'm happy that Ole Miss won because I think it makes this game that much more intriguing.
I totally agree. Now, I lost a bet. I had Georgia laying the 6.5, which I knew was pretty much dead once the fourth quarter rolled around. They had no answer for Trinidad Chambliss. But as the game wore on, I'm with you, man. To see Trinidad Chambliss go up against this defense that is just on another level right now. And let's be honest, an Ole Miss defense that is very gettable, at least statistically speaking, against a Miami offense that has played, and I think because of the situations that they were put into, they didn't feel like they needed to be super aggressive, right? They got the pick six against Ohio State. They played against a pretty, you know, on the road in a hostile environment. They didn't want to make mistakes. Do we see Carson Beck maybe get a little bit more aggressive? So I am wildly intrigued by this game on Thursday, and I can't wait to watch it. You know, you mentioned Carson Beck. He used his legs a little bit against Ohio State, to your point. He extended the chains. I thought Carson Beck played a very smart football game. I mean, this dude's been around college football for, what, a half century or half decade, however you want to define it. And I thought he played a smart football game. And that's been kind of his undoing at times, at least at Georgia, moments this year. But you know, you think to some of the big moments this year, whether it was the Notre Dame game in week one or, you know, the Ohio State game, he's kind of stepped up. So, you know, from a prop angle, I'd be curious to see if he's able to utilize his legs a little bit there in on Thursday night, too.
Yeah, no, and that's definitely something that, you know, can be a weapon for you, right? I mean, we saw Ohio State do that a lot in the game against Notre Dame using Will Howard, you know, in last year's championship game. And they really started to use Howard a lot more in that type of role as they got deeper into the playoffs. And I do think that that's probably something that Miami will look to do here as well. You know, maybe you get some of that, you know, option read with Fletcher and the way that he's been running the football. And like, speaking of that, dude, you know, like Dawson also has a great weapon in Fletcher because that guy falls forward on every single carry. Like, there's just something about him. I don't know if it's his physicality as a runner or if it's just maybe a technique type of thing, but bro's always falling forward for an extra yard, an extra 2 yards, something like that. And it's so, so valuable to a football team. And again, it's why I do think we do see points here, but why I do like Miami a little bit more is just because, again, from a detail standpoint, and Chambliss will probably take care of the football. I don't know that Miami will be able to capitalize on turnovers here. He's only thrown 3 picks this season. But just the way that Miami puts themselves into those situations and doesn't need something like Chambliss going out there and making an absurd play like Ole Miss may need on 3rd and 9, 3rd and 8, something like that. So, again, I love this game. It's not the matchup that I think any of us expected we would get. I think we all assumed it would be Ohio State and Georgia. But I'm really excited for this one. And it's good to get some new blood out there, too, in terms of the national landscape.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And, you know, just to gotta give a little extra middle finger to Lane Kiffin also is a nice little cherry on top, if you will. You know, we'll continue to break this game down all throughout the week. Lastly, I'll mention this. Malachi Toney, you know, his effect was felt massively in the Ohio State game, even though he only had 5 catches for 16 yards, because Matt Patricia, rightfully so, spent a lot of time focusing on him. And because of that, I think you had C.J. Daniels make a couple more plays. You had Mark Fletcher make a couple more plays. So I'm fascinated to see that chess match, too, where you've got Pete Golding, his mindset on trying to slow down Malachi Toney, who is such a, you know, special talent.
Yeah, for sure. And look, you know, I mean, that's really important, too. You know, you have a guy that you have to game plan for because he could do so many things out there in space with the football that you run into a situation of maybe not paying enough attention to a Daniels or maybe not paying enough attention to Beck as a runner, right? You know, because they use Toney a lot in terms of, you know, motion, jet sweep looks, stuff like that. It spreads the linebackers out a little bit to create those opportunities for Beck to just kind of go up the middle and fall forward and get a first down and, you know, got to convert those 3rd and 4s, 3rd and 5s that we talked about already. So, yeah, it's I think that's one of the nuances of being an offensive coordinator that not enough guys do in college football, because they always want to feed their guy, right? You always want to feed that guy and get him numbers and help him get to the next level and all that kind of thing. But there are some times when using that player as a decoy is really, really valuable. And I think we saw that from Miami in the game against Ohio State. They kept putting him in motion, and it really hurt Ohio State's back seven because Caleb Downs had to tell everybody where to go and what to do. And like I said, Arvel Reese was just non-existent in that football game. So it was something that allowed Miami, who was the lesser of the two offenses, to be able to, you know, as you mentioned, they went 7-14 on 3rd down. It just enough. They had that back-breaking drive to put the game away. Like, I don't know that, you know, there's going to be any head coaching openings for Shannon Dawson once they get through their playoff run, but I bet this guy is a head coach after the next season for sure.
Yeah, I mean, his offense, you can't say anything negative about his offense a year ago with Cam Ward, and now another really strong year as well. We mentioned the secret weapon that Ole Miss has at the kicking position. Our buddy Timmy Chang had quite the secret weapon this year in the Tokyo Toe, Kansei Matsuzawa. And just a reminder, you've seen the kicks, you felt the injury, now it's time to, now it's time to wear it with the official Tokyo Toe gear inspired by the Lou Groza finalist Kansei Matsuzawa. From bold tees to clean hoodies, every piece brings the same focus and drive Kansei showed on the field. Show your pride, show your passion only at TokyoToe.com. That's TokyoToe.com. TokyoToe.com. Gear up and own the moment. Also, I don't know if you saw this, the Sickos Committee tweeted out that they had received the Tokyo Toe blend of coffee that the Honolulu coffee brand is brewed. So he's got his own coffee out there. And I'll say this, Adam, this is a college football podcast, but based off of what we saw in Charm City yesterday from their kicker, I think they wouldn't mind getting a guy like Kansei Matsuzawa.
Yeah. God, I wish she had gone to Ohio State instead of going to Hawaii, but... I mean, you know, like, it's just, you know, and I think that, you know, with all these bend and don't break defensive styles that are out there nowadays, like, the value of a kicker just continues to go up. And, you know, I mean, we're seeing what I think I saw, like, a third of the players in college football are in the transfer portal, which is just a wild percentage. But a lot of teams, you know, based off of seeing Carnero here in the playoff for Ole Miss, based off of seeing Matsuzawa for Hawaii in the big season that they had, like, kickers are going to start to get themselves paid out there in the transfer portal. So good for them, because it's, tell you what, man, it's valuable if you can get three instead of that big momentum shift to getting absolutely nothing.
Well, I know we didn't get to see the my Irish down in the Pop-Tarts Bowl. That was a big discussion, I know, amongst many people out there. But maybe they would have missed a kick to win the game, because their kicking situation was a disaster this year. Before we move on to Oregon and Indiana, let us know what is rolling over at the website, Adam.
Yeah, there's a lot happening. You know, I mean, I realize that we only have four college football games left, the FCS championship on Monday night, and then the two semifinals and the title game. Of course, we have the Senior Bowls, the East-West, Shrine Bowl, the Hula Bowl, these types of things. But, you know, for all intents and purposes, college football is really winding down. Now we're into the NFL playoffs, so I think people feel like things are slowing down. That ain't the case over at VSiN.com. College basketball every single day from Greg Peterson, Monday through Saturday from me. You got Tyler Shoemaker's TSI projections for men's and women's college basketball 4 or 5 days a week. NBA, NHL coverage, Zachary Cohen doing the NBA, Jonathan Davis doing the NHL. We're not far from the golf season beginning again. We've got a pretty big UFC event coming up here in January as well, now that they're on Paramount Plus. So those are all the things that we cover. And also, we're going to be getting some horse racing coverage from our friends at DRF, at Daily Racing Form, as we got the road to the Kentucky Derby going on. So, yeah, maybe it's not football. Maybe it's not as football heavy as some people would like it to be. But we got all the daily sports for you, you know, over at VSiN.com. So I highly encourage everyone to go to VSiN.com/subscribe. Check out the subscription options that are there. And finally, I'll get off my soapbox here in a second. Tuesday, February 3rd will be the release date for our Super Bowl 60 betting guide. So we'll have best bets from you as well as our other hosts, all kinds of stuff in that guide, breakdowns of the game, inside and out. Really looking forward to having that one out, and looking forward to seeing who we have in Super Bowl 60 here coming up in Santa Clara.
Who the hell knows? I mean, honestly, right, man, you know, it's funny. We are slowing down, but we also might have arguably the best 5-day stretch of the sports calendar coming up, starting Thursday with Miami Ole Miss, Indiana Oregon on Friday, the doubleheader on Saturday, the tripleheader Sunday, and then the Monday nighter for Wild Card weekend. So let's dive into the game down in Atlanta. This is more of the predictable of the two semifinals, Oregon versus Indiana. A game we did see back on October 11th, a game that Oregon was a 7-point favorite at home against Indiana. Now they're a 4-point underdog. Saw a little bit of love come in on Oregon. This number was 4.5 out there. I think there might still be a 4.5. I hit the under 47.5 at open. That's moved a little bit. I think this is just going to be an absolute war, man. And, you know, Texas Tech, wow, they got exposed offensively in that Orange Bowl. But, you know, you got to give some credit to Oregon and then Indiana. I mean, you talk about an absolute ass whooping. And, you know, it's funny because there's some people saying that, well, the committee got it right putting Miami in over Notre Dame. And if you listen to this podcast, we would have said, no, Notre Dame and Miami should have both been in. Alabama should not have been in. But regardless, they got exposed. And this Indiana team, man, Kirk Cignetti reminded me of Larry Bird during the 1998 Eastern Conference Finals when Reggie Miller hit that big three against the Bulls, and he had no emotion on his face. Cignetti doesn't smile. He just kind of has a grimace the entire game, no matter what score it is.
Yeah, this dude's a stone-cold killer, man. And he's also out there killing it in the transfer portal right now, too, as he's preparing for this college football playoff semifinal game, which is just wild. I mean, so there's a lot of staying power right now for this Hoosiers team, to be sure. Admittedly, this game is a lot less exciting to me than the other one, than Miami and Ole Miss, just because, like you said, we've seen this one already, 30-20 Indiana, but there were under 600 yards of offense in that game. The two teams ran for 3 yards and 2.7 yards per carry, so there wasn't really a whole lot of available ground in terms of the running game. And really, you know, neither quarterback was all that impressive. But there was one thing that Indiana did in that first game that Oregon didn't do. And Oregon had the 20 points, but they had a pick six from Brandon Finney, who was terrific in the game against Texas Tech. But Indiana had 3 75-yard touchdown drives in that first game. And I think that's what makes this game a lot less exciting to me, is I think Indiana wins and covers. I think this team is for real. It took me a long time to come around on Indiana, mostly just because throughout my lifetime, they were a basketball school, and that was it. And I think just by name only, it took me a long time to come around on this team. And like, Fernando Mendoza wasn't great at Cal. He was fine. You know, he was maybe a little bit above average. Now all of a sudden, he's probably going to be the number one pick coming out here to Sin City, which is a really interesting fit with his personality in this town. But Indiana minus four, man. Like, I just, Dan Lanning's team has had two very different performances, right? Offensively, they had issues against Texas Tech. They really did. Defensively, they were terrific. They gave up over 500 yards to James Madison in that first playoff game. Now, of course, they were scoring at will, so that's probably part of it. But I think Oregon is just, I think they're inconsistent. For as good of a team as they are, I think they're inconsistent. And Indiana is the poster child of consistency. Outside of that weird game against Penn State, they've just been phenomenal. And I think they're phenomenal again here on Friday.
I want to read a tweet from our buddy, the Bear, Chris Felica, regarding this Indiana team. He said, "The biggest reason Indiana wins, they don't do dumb stuff. Bad losses more than good wins, and they don't do bad things. Second in fewest penalty yardage per game, lead in turnover margin, have just 8 turnovers all season. Third down defense is holding opponents at 28%. Lead in third down conversions, 56%. And you saw it in the Rose Bowl. If you hadn't been watching Indiana all year, Alabama tried to do some crazy shit and bring out the punt team and run them back off the field. And Cignetti's over there like, come on, dude, what are you doing? Like, this isn't going to work against us, right? So they're fundamentally sound. But unlike last year's team, they've got some dudes, right? Like, they have dudes now. And that's the scary part about Indiana from not only this year, but the staying power. And look, thinking back to the preseason, I didn't think they would do this, obviously. I knew they wouldn't drop off, Adam. But, you know, you go out and you get a guy like Fernando Mendoza, to your point. And I looked it up. He was, I think, 22nd. According to 247 in the transfer portal ranking. So a good haul, but not like the number one player, which, by the way, if you want to laugh, it was Nico Iamaleava, who was the number one player in last year's transfer portal. So look, this is a team that's wildly well-coached, wildly disciplined, and it's going to come down to, does Oregon make mistakes? I mean, you think back to that game against Oregon, to your point, Indiana throws a pick six. It's 20-20. Place is going nuts in the fourth quarter at Autzen Stadium. And Indiana goes right back down and scores a touchdown. Long sustained drive. So I don't have a side yet on this one. I did play under. I think this one is a battle, man, between two really tough teams. We know Dan Lanning. What was he mumbling? You know, walking out. Pound of flesh, I think is what he was saying, walking out onto the field against Texas Tech. So I'm excited to see this one, maybe a little more excited to you, because I think this is just going to be a battle royale, if you will. And, you know, it's funny. I wanted to look up what first half unders have done so far this postseason, because they've been hitting at a pretty high clip. And you've seen some first half under money come in on this game. It was up 23.5. It's now down, I think, to 22.5. First half unders, Adam, in this postseason are 27-16. And now I know every game is a different entity, but when you have a big sample size like that, you've just seen a lot of lower scoring games out of the chute. The first round, 2-2 to the under, so nothing too crazy there. In the quarterfinal round, you had 3-1 to the under in the first half. So I would probably lean that way too, even though the number has moved. I think this is going to be a very low scoring. And when you think about Ole Miss, the tempo, right? Tempo, tempo, tempo. I don't think these teams are really going to want to have that much tempo in this game on Friday night.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And one thing I do want to mention here, another reason why I like Indiana is, you know, I talked about it with with the Miami and Ole Miss game, right? There's just so much continuity on that Miami sideline right now. And as we talked about, you know, in breaking down that game, both Corey Heatherman and Shannon Dawson have been excellent throughout the college football playoff, right? And yeah, Charlie Weiss is kind of doing double duty, but LSU is an entity that recruits itself, right? I mean, and obviously Lane Kiffin is there doing his thing, and Lane Kiffin can be a closer. He has been, you know, from a recruiting standpoint throughout the course of his career. When you look at the situation for Oregon, though, where Will Stein is at Kentucky, Tosh Lupoi is at Cal, those are two difficult institutions to recruit for, right? Kentucky's a basketball school. We all know it. They're in the SEC. You don't really have a chance at going to the playoff or playing in a Premier Bowl game or something like that. So it'd be pretty hard to get kids to come to Lexington and play college football. And then with Cal, you know, they're in Berkeley. They have some pretty strict academic requirements that you also have to consider, along with looking for dudes that are athletic and can actually help your roster. So when you have Stein and Lupoi, they're doing double duty at jobs that require a lot of focus and a lot of attention with the transfer portal open. That's problematic to me with Oregon. And maybe that has something to do with why, you know, the offense was great in the first game and the defense was great in the second game. And, you know, the other two units weren't as good in those respective games. Maybe there's just some of that inconsistency there for Oregon, whereas Indiana doesn't have to worry about that. Like, and as you mentioned, Kirk Cicinetti is just a guy that he, you know, the cliche of being all business, it's true with him. And like I said, and I wrote about this, you know, when these lines came out and I wrote my initial thoughts on the opening lines, exactly what you mentioned, right? Right after the pick six, 12 play, 75-yard touchdown drive, ending in a Fernando Mendoza touchdown pass. On the road, in Eugene, miserable environment for them, right? Where a lot of us probably thought, oh, this is Ohio State part two, where Indiana was undefeated, went to the horseshoe, got blown out, and got pushed around in that football game. That didn't happen in Eugene. And they had that bounce back moment that feels like a microcosm of their season. I think it's Indiana and Miami in your national championship game.
You mentioned it already. For those who hadn't seen it, Josh Hoover, the TCU transfer, he's going to Indiana. Nick Marsh, the Michigan State transfer, who, according to reports, who was down to Notre Dame or LSU until Indiana got involved, and he's going to Indiana. They got Turbo Richard from Boston College. They got Josh Burnham and Edge from Notre Dame. They have not only focused on winning a national championship, they pulled in, I think, 8 transfers this weekend. So things are rolling there in Bloomington as we speak, and I'm excited to see this one. And as mentioned, we'll have breakdowns from Matt Humans, we'll have breakdowns from Brett Ciancia, and we'll have breakdowns from Hoosier Wes Reynolds, as the week goes on. Before we get out of here, we do have a championship game. If you're listening to this on Monday night, we have a championship game tonight. We didn't want to lead with it because obviously this could get outdated quickly, but you did do a quick write-up over at vsin.com. It is kind of a David and Goliath type of situation. Illinois State went on the road every round of the FCS tournament, won every game, won as a 3+ touchdown underdog at the Fargo Dome against North Dakota State. And then you've got the Bobcats, who are kind of emerging as a superpower in the FCS. So Montana State around 10.5 point favorite in Nashville on Monday night.
Yeah, so Illinois State's a phenomenal story, right? I mean, beating North Dakota State, 23.5 point underdog. They lost to them by 17 during the regular season. They lost their regular season finale by 30 to Southern Illinois. And then all of a sudden, they go into the playoff here, and as you mentioned, winning all their games on the road, and now have to go to a neutral setting where I saw some footage, you know, of kind of some of the pregame stuff there in the Music City, and like, I think the whole city of Bozeman is in Nashville for this game, so that's pretty cool. But when you look at the body of work for these teams, right, I mean, Illinois State, they outgained teams by an average of fewer than 10 yards per game during the season. They outscored teams so far 30.6 to 25.1. Montana State's numbers are dramatically different. Their quarterback, Justin Lampson, legitimate dual threat guy, 38 total touchdowns this season. They have 2 1,000-yard running backs, too, on this Montana State team. I just don't think that Illinois State can really match up here in the trenches. And this is also a game where if Montana State leads, because their running game is so proficient, they can just keep moving the chains, keep running the clock out, not give Illinois State the chance to possibly look at the back door. I like Montana State minus 10.5 here in this one. Illinois State's a fantastic story. Awesome story. Huge upset. The Cinderellas that we love to see in March Madness. We've got one in the FCS playoffs, but I think they kind of get blown out here on Monday night in Nashville.
So I'll wrap with a shout out to sort of a Cinderella story. I think historically speaking, it's a Cinderella story. For anyone who's followed Division III football very casually over the past, let's say, two decades, Adam, Mount Union wins the title, or UW-Whitewater wins the title. North Central is kind of the new superpower emerging in Division III football. You don't see this really ever happen. A team who has not made the NCAA tournament since 1996, a team that had 20 straight losing seasons until 2021, UW River Falls won the national championship on Sunday night while everyone was watching Steelers and Ravens, and what a crazy game that ended up being. UW River Falls beat North Central 24-14. I don't think there are any futures markets out there on Division III football. I imagine this would have been a pretty long shot. And Matt Walker, he is in his 15th year as the head coach there. They won three games total, Adam, in his first three seasons, and now they are national champions. And their quarterback broke Joe Burrow's record for most all-purpose yards in a season, over 6,000 all-purpose yards. So really cool story in the college football world that took place on Saturday night. UW River Falls, who had not been in the Division III tournament since 96, gets the national championship. They averaged over 600 yards per game, Adam, and 80 plays per game. So a pretty cool story and history there for Division III football that wrapped up on Sunday night.
Find me that offensive coordinator. And let's see where he ends up going.
I know. I was looking at their quarterback. I'm like, oh, my God, is this guy going to be the next, you know, Trinidad Chambliss? But apparently, I think he has exhausted his eligibility. But, hey, who knows? In this day and age, maybe Division III football doesn't count towards eligibility anymore based off of what Diego Pavia was to do. If I'm Caleb Blaha, I believe that is his how you say his last name, B-L-A-H-A, I say, yeah, give me another year of eligibility. Let's go make some money. But that was pretty cool to see. Matt Walker, their head coach, and their offensive coordinator is Joe Matheson. So there you go. We'll see if any of these coaches move up the ranks when it comes to UW River Falls football as they capped off a 14-1 season and with the national championship. So pretty cool to see that unfold the way that it did on Sunday night in Canton. They played that national championship in Canton, Ohio.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Have they always played it there?
No, it's usually been in Salem, Virginia. I think they're starting to move it around a little bit more. It used to always be in Salem, Virginia. But yeah, that's how I'll wrap it up. Any parting words for you when it comes to the semifinals of the college football season?
No. I'm just thankful to everybody that has subscribed, has tuned into the podcast. I know that, you know, we've really been expanding and growing our podcast library here at VSiN over the last several months, but this has always been a podcast that has done very well. And a lot of that has to do with the hard work that you do, hosting multiple episodes a week. I'm just here because I don't think anyone else wants to do Monday. But no, I am really thankful to everybody out there for listening. And, shout out to you for the great job you've done, not only just this season, but also throughout the duration, of the College Football Betting Podcast.
Yeah, it's been awesome, no doubt. And it started with you and me, and it's expanded. Humans every week. Wes Reynolds has been a part of it. We've had some great guests in the off season, and it's a testament to everyone. We'll have a wrap up show in a couple of weeks. You and I can gush over how great our listeners have been because they've been awesome. And let's just keep it rolling. We will have a couple more episodes this week. We'll have more episodes before the national championship, of course. But that'll do it for this installment of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. As mentioned, your usual suspects later this week, Matt Eumanns, Wes Reynolds, and Brett Ciancia. I think we'll do two more episodes this week before the semifinals. Thanks for Rick, our producer, for stepping in for Wyatt today. For Adam Burke, I'm Tim Murray. This has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.